Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange Open Mic Session. Today's topic is Non-SSL Security in WebSphere MQ. My name is Joseph Wan, and this session will give you the opportunity to speak to our panel of experts on a variety of subjects related to today's topic. Moving on to slide number 2. In today's Open Mic session, we will start off by introducing to you our panel of experts for the day. We will then move on to give you a brief introduction to non-SSL security in WebSphere MQ. Next, our panel of experts will answer questions that were pre-submitted to us through email. Then, we will open the lines for a live Q&A period. And finally, the session will end with a summary of the Open Mic session. Moving on to slide number 3. At this time, I would like to introduce to you our panel of experts for today's call. Our panel consists of T. Rob Wyatt, Senior Managing Consultant. Next, we have Tom Snyder, Advisory IT Architect. Then we have Morag Hudson, WebSphere MQ Development Product Architect. And finally, we have Paul O'Donnell, Senior Software Engineer. Now, before we get to the question and answer period, our panel would like to give you a technical overview of the topic. Moving on to slide number 4, and please go ahead, Paul.
Hi. Today we will be discussing non-SSL security configurations for WebSphere MQ version 6 and 7 on Unix, Windows, and ZOS platforms. In order to protect our clients, we will not be able to discuss any specific security incidents. And to make sure that you can implement the things that we do discuss, we will be using only published materials. We hope that you will use the Q&A time to ask questions about non-SSL security topics. But if you do have some questions on SSL, we have links for 3 presentations at the end of the slides here. So hope you enjoy the conference.
Thank you, Paul. We will now begin our question and answer session with questions that were pre-submitted to us before the webcast. I'll now hand the presentation over to our panel of experts by moving on to question number 1 on slide number 5.
Hi, this is T. Rob Wyatt. This is my question here. So the question is, I've put SSL on my application channels. Is there anything else that I need to do? And then, Joseph, if you'll flip to slide 6 and take a look at the answer. And the answer to this is kind of what I call security for honest people, right? We've turned on SSL on the channels that we intend for people to use, but we need to make sure that the default channels and any other channels that are on the queue manager also authenticate the connections. So the first step is to go around and lock down the channels that don't have SSL on them. So we would set SSL peer, sorry, the ones that do have SSL on them by setting SSL peer or an MCA user. There's also a presentation that describes the OEM settings that you would use because it's a little too involved to go into in detail here. And you can download that presentation at the link there. So that's at t-rob.net/links, and then you look for the MQ security hardening presentation that's there. So to sum up, yes, make sure that in addition to the channels that use SSL, you either authenticate all the other channels or disable them so that someone who was attacking the queue manager wouldn't simply bypass the SSL channels that you've set up. That's it for question 1. Joseph, if you'll advance the deck, I'll turn it over to the next person.
Hi there, this is Morag Hewson here. I'll take question 2. So question 2 is, how do I apply authorization to a topic? Joseph, can you advance to slide 8, please? So there's a big answer here, but essentially I wanted to highlight that, first of all, the topic tree is a hierarchical structure, which is a little different from your standard familiar MQ objects. And you may wish to choose to provide authorizations that are the same across your entire topic tree, or you may wish to secure differently certain sections of your topic tree. In order to apply security to your topic tree and thus have authorizations granted to users to use your topic tree, choose a node in the topic tree that is the top of the section you wish to secure in a particular manner. This might mean, if you're doing the entire tree the same, that you are securing it right at the very top at the system-based topic node. And that's perfectly acceptable if you want all your security to be the same on all your topics. Otherwise, you pick a node somewhere a little lower down into the topic tree, and you make a topic object that points at that node in the topic tree. This could, of course, be the other extreme, which is every child node right at the leaves of your topic tree. However, I suspect it will probably be somewhere in between. Our advice is to pick a level somewhere where you have the siblings all at the same point in the structure and make your topic objects at that point in the topic tree. So you do a defined topic object, point it at the topic string that represents the node you wish to secure, and then apply security to the profile that is the topic object name, which is the usual 48-character MQ object name. Then anyone using topic strings at or below, so children of that node that you have secured, will inherit the security of that parent node, and you do not need to apply distinct identical security to each node lower down in the tree due to the inheritance model that is there for that hierarchical topic tree structure. And I think that's all I have to say on that question. So, Joseph, you can advance to question 3 on page 9.
Okay, so question 3 is, what security considerations exist for a Webster MQ file transfer edition? Joseph, if you'll advance to the next slide, we've got the answer. And this is a question that we've been getting quite a bit as FTE rolls out to more and more customers, and they want to know, okay, now I've got files moving, how do I secure this? And the answer really is that FTE is pretty much like any other MQ application in that it authenticates when the application connects. That can either be in bindings mode or over a client. And if it connects over a client, then all the usual things that we would do with SSL and MCA user and OAM would be applied to FTE. And you can use your normal MQ authorization tools to do that. Typically, we would have the FTE agent running as something other than MQM. And then we would put it in an appropriate group and then apply the authorizations to that group. The administrators could be in the MQM group or they could be in another group. And then the people who are driving transfers as end users, they would have their own set of connectivity, and you would authorize them. They're coming in through Eclipse probably, so you would authorize them the same way that you would authorize the Eclipse desktop. So there again, it's pretty much like any other MQ application. And if you're already applying security on your applications and you're doing that granularly, you would fit this into the same model. So that's question 3. Joseph, if you would advance to the next slide, we'll turn it over to Tom, I believe.
Yeah, hi, this is Tom Schneider. Question number 4 is, how can I find the cause of a not authorized error on ZOS? And Joseph, if you could advance to slide 12. On the ZOS environment, there aren't authorization events, but what there are RACF information messages that get printed to the JES message log of the master started task. So you would want to go to that job, and then you would want to select the JES message log. And for each 2035 reason code, assuming RACF is the external security manager, there should be an ICH-408I RACF message. And when you find those messages, they're going to document usually either a problem with the user ID, such as the user's expired, the user's not defined on that ZOS environment, or an invalid password was submitted along with the user ID. And then the other thing you might see would be if it's just flat out a lack of authorization, then you'll see the fully qualified resource name that the user is trying to access. You'll see the user, their default group. You'll see the profile in RACF that protects that resource, which is probably going to be a generic profile, and then you'll see the level of access that was attempted versus the level of access that user actually has. So using that information, you should be able to correct the problem. One other thing you might find is if multiple checks are done, if it's some kind of an MQI call, say, where you're going against the profile that protects the queue and also protects context, you may correct one lack of authorization and then find that you're failing on a subsequent check, in which case there would be a couple of steps to get the problem resolved. Joseph, if you'd move on to slide 13, please. Question number five is, how can I list security profiles used by WebSphere MQ on ZOS? And moving on to slide 14, since the security manager on ZOS is not part of the MQ product itself, you would need to use either RACF command, or if you're using a different external security manager, the command that comes with that product. And in RACF, there's an rlist command that's used to list out the MQ series classes. And one of the things that's a bit tricky about this command, you can give it a single asterisk as the input to the command, and it'll list all of the profiles in that class. Or you can give it a specific profile, which could either be fully qualified or a generic string, and it'll list out that particular profile. What you can't do is give it some kind of a generic string and expect the command to list all the profiles that would be matches under that generic string, because what it's going to do is look for an actual profile that's defined that matches the target that you specified. So if you give it a generic string that doesn't match any specific profile that's in the database, then you're just going to get an error message back that that profile wasn't found. Joseph, would you advance to slide 15, please? The next question, question six, is about customers planning to move from 1024-bit digital certificates to 2048-bit certificates. And it asks what MQ versions released would satisfy the requirement. So if we can move on to slide 16. And the information here isn't entirely correct. I pulled part of this from some of the documentation, which needs to be updated. And starting with GSKit 703.18, 2048 keys would be supported. And that version of GSKit was included all the way back with 6010 of the distributed product. I'll ask to have the slides updated before they get published following the presentation. And then within RACF, in version 10 or version 11, the only type of keys can either be defined to the ICSF hardware, PCICC hardware, or else they're stored in the RACF database. And of those, at that version of RACF, the only key size that's not, the only key database that's not supported for 1024 would be the ICSF stored keys. Okay, Joseph, you can move on to slide 17, please.
So this is Morag here. I'll take question 7A. We split question 7 into two, so there'll be a 7B following. Question 7A is, how does MQ security differentiate between administrative actions and application use of MQ resources? So, Joseph, if you can advance to slide 18. So the answer is split into two. On ZOS, administrative actions and application access use different profiles in the different classes. So there are five different classes, and then, of course, more recently, mixed-case versions of the same for classes holding the profiles on ZOS. And so administrative actions and application actions are completely segregated, so you can completely separate what an administrative person might be able to do versus what an application user might be able to do. On the distributed platforms, the same is true if we omit to look at the MQM group. So if we take the privileged users to one side, because they do have access to everything, then there is additionally a good separation of actions between administrative and application tasks. The authorizations are different. For example, you have a plus change authorization flag that is for altering a resource, which is an administrative action. And we have other flags, for example, plus get, which is an application action, so if I want to open a queue to get from it. The only thing to watch out for is plus display does cross the boundaries between administrative and application uses, but all other authorizations are well segregated for non-MQM group or non-privileged users of the distributed MQ product. Okay, advance to slide 19, please.
I'm here. So question 7B is whether there's any sandbox type of security scheme that can be used to protect MQ internal objects versus the application-specific objects. Joseph, if you'll advance to 20. The answer is that the Object Authority Manager can control access to the system objects and the user-defined objects. And typically what we do here is, you know, when we have people who we want to give access or limited access to certain system objects, we put them in a group other than MQM so they don't get access to the whole world, and then we allow that group to have access to specific things. So just as an example, if you've got a channel, a cluster receiver channel that you don't want to be able to administer the queue manager, you give it access to system cluster command queue, but not to system admin command queue. And that way you can really make a distinction between actions that are administrative versus application or user actions. There's a sample script. There's a couple sample scripts that you can download from our website. If you go to the WMQ page, c-rob.net/WMQ, there's an entry there right at the top that says OAM templates. And it has the ones that I usually use for channels. So one of those files is for ServerCon channels, and the other file is for the MCATAC channels. And you can take those and use them, extend them, and use those same templates for end users. Just remember to make the distinction between the ones that are intended for server cons and the ones that are intended for MCA channels. And that's it for 7B. Joseph, if we could go to the next slide. Okay, so this question was gotten this a few times since the new version of the standalone support pack came out. The question is, since security is such a hot topic, are the MQ clients and the new MQ Explorer support pack and the CRP freely available to the public? Should these be locked down so only IBM customers licensed for MQ can obtain them? Our research with Explorer indicates that it opens additional security risks. Now, what the person who asked that question is referring to, Joseph, if you could go to slide 22, the person who, several people actually asked similar questions, and what they're referring to is that in version 7 MQ Explorer, there's now actually a panel where you can put in an ID and a password. And what people are beginning to notice is that the ID that is placed into that panel is used by MQ to become the ID that runs the channel. So if you check your channel status, you'll actually see that ID there. But that the password isn't checked. And so people are objecting to this because they're realizing that whatever ID is presented is the ID that MQ uses. And my answer to this is that this doesn't actually open up a new security exposure. We've got customers who all along have been using exits that will check an ID and a password. And the problem that we previously had was that there was no way for Explorer to actually send the ID and the password to that exit. And so we had a situation where people who wanted to secure the connection were unable to. So by opening that up in the panel, then now it's very easy to put in the credentials that you would pass to an exit and then allow the exit to verify those credentials. And currently, the Capitalware exit will actually take those credentials and do a lookup against the OS or against LDAP. So, you know, there's a solution that's available that we previously couldn't use. Now, I also want to mention that just because this is now available in Explorer doesn't mean that there's all of a sudden a new hole. There has been, for quite some time, a Python toolkit that you can use without installing the MQ client. It's entirely written in Python, and it knows about the MQ protocols, and it will emulate the client, and you can connect with that. If you're using Java, all along it was part of the API that you could simply put in the user ID and password in Java and achieve the same thing. So the answer is that we're not actually opening up new security exposures. It is making a particular feature of security more visible than it used to be, but the new changes that are in Explorer actually allow people to achieve better security with MQ Explorer than they were able to without those changes. So that's a little bit long on question 8 there. Sorry about that, but let me turn it over to the next presenter. And, Joseph, if you could advance the slide.
Thank you again to our panel of experts for answering to pre-submitted questions. At this point in time, Jackie, we would like to open the lines for a live question and answer period.
Our first question comes from Alan Griffin. Your line is open.
Hey, Rob. Alan Griffin with SegFlight. How are you doing today? On the MQ Explorer part, could we lock down the MQ Explorer reply queue so people that aren't authorized to use MQ Explorer could not get the reply queue response back?
So the question is whether we can lock down the MQ Explorer reply queue to prevent people from using MQ Explorer from having access. Did I get that right, Alan?
I believe so. You know, you have to have the reply model queue in the queue manager before you can connect.
Right. And the answer to that is, again, this is kind of my model about security for honest people, right? So anybody that, you know, typically you don't want to, you're not really worried about that would be using Explorer would actually be restricted by this. However, the people that you do need to worry about wouldn't be using that model queue.
And I completely understand that.
Go ahead.
Because, you know, our base, you know, implementation and our security people say not to use MQ Explorer, but to use our third-party package. So, you know.
Is the third-party package a desktop tool or a central tool?
It's a central tool.
Okay, and probably the reasoning behind that is the central tool, typically examples of this include AppWatch and Infrared 360 and QPASA. Trying to remember what some of the other ones are. I don't want to do a disservice to any of our business partners. But the deal with the central tools is typically you've got a web server, Omegamon, there we go, there's the IBM tool.
Yeah.
There's a central server.
Yeah, get that Tivoli product in there.
So the central tool would have a single connection to MQ, and then the access to the central tool could be mediated through something like SiteMinder, for example, in the case of AppWatch or IR360 or Omegamon would use.
You know, we have Kerberos. Right.
And then the other thing is that the central tool actually maintains really a central audit log that's, you know, of all the activity across the whole network, whereas the desktop tools, if they maintain a log at all, it's basically out on the desktop in the wild. So, you know, in a lot of cases, especially with compliance, like PCI, HIPAA, SOX compliance, then the direction that a lot of customers are going with is to use that central tool for those reasons and to lock out the desktop tools. If you were going to use a desktop tool in that environment, I would say if you used SSL authentication and mapped the SSL certificate to a distinguished name, either by hard coding it in the channel or by using an exit, then you could achieve the level of individual user authentication and authorization that you're trying to achieve. But it would be, you know, something that you'd probably limit to administrators, for example. You wouldn't want the whole population doing that if you had the central tool. You'd really want to manage those things in the central tool.
That's exactly what we're wanting to do. So you would recommend using SSL on all the channels that they could come in on and limiting it that way. Okay.
Absolutely. And that's a good point, right? So if you use SSL on one channel, then you're pretty much obligated to either use SSL or exits or lock down all the other channels. And that's the thing. That's one of the things that's commonly overlooked, right? So I have a lot of customers that, I've got one customer that has SSL channels that physicians use to connect and pass customer health data, but system admin servercon and system desk servercon were still left with the defaults, and so the physicians were restricted by that, but anybody who wanted their data wouldn't be.
Thank you very much, T-Rob.
Thanks, Alan.
Our next question comes from Zikas Rana. Your line is open.
Thank you for taking my question. My question is related to the extended security edition of MQ. Some time ago in MQ user group, it was announced that there may be a lighter version of MQ extended security edition, which does not need TAM and TIM. So any update about that, or is it there? Because I couldn't find it after that.
Okay, so the question is whether there's any news about Webster MQ ESE and a possible future version of that might be coming out. And the answer is that until there's an official announcement from IBM, that we really can't talk about any new versions that might be out there or any features that might be in the new versions. And I apologize for that. But there is an early access program for most of these products, right? So I know there's an early access program for ESE, another one for File Transfer Edition, another one for MQ. Anyone who wants to participate in those programs is invited to contact us. And certainly if you want to contact me directly, I can hook you up with the right people. Otherwise, I would say talk with your account rep, mention the name Early Access Program and the product you want to join, and we can get you into those. And while you're in there, then you have access to that type of information, although you are under a very strict NDA, and we'd ask you not to talk about it until the announcement came out, just like the IBM people are restricted.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Innocent Watat. Your line is open.
Yes, good morning, everyone. My question is actually a follow-up of the question 6 about SSL and the 124 or 2048 bit certificate. You said that in your answer that both MQ6 and 7 will support 2048 bit keys. But when you check the SSL cipher spec on the SSL property of the channel, you only see 2024 there, bit handshake there at the moment. How do you specify SSL to be 2048 bit key on the property or on the selection on the cipher spec on the property channel?
Okay, let me summarize the question and make sure that we've got it right. So on question 6, we were discussing 2048-bit keys and the versions of MQ that those are available in. And the question is, looking at the SSL cipher specs that are available on the channel, don't really see anything that says 2048. And,
correct.
I believe I'm going to turn this over to Tom, and I think the answer will have to do with the difference between the certificates and the cipher spec that's used at runtime. So, Tom, is that something you'd like to say?
The key that's in the certificate should only be used for the handshake itself. It shouldn't be used for any follow-up encryption.
Okay, so to summarize what Tom said was that, in question 6, we were talking about the size of the key that is used to sign the certificate as opposed to the SSL cipher spec on the channel, which is the size of the keys that the channels exchange in the negotiation and subsequently use to pass in data. So one of these is a key signing, certificate signing key. That's the subject of question 6. And then the other one was what's available in the cipher spec on the channel. To maybe expand a little bit more on what's available in the cipher spec, we've been looking at the differences in GSKit from version to version. And I really don't know what's coming up in new versions of GSKit, but I will say that there's been a lot of activity with different cipher specs and cipher suites on the Internet in general. For example, it's pretty commonly accepted now that you want to get away from using MD5 and start using the SHA family of hashes, for example, because the MD5s are able to make hash collisions fairly easily there. Now, so I expect that we're going to see those things that you're seeing in encryption in general start rolling into GSKit versions as we move forward. In the event that that happens, then look for the cipher specs to change, and more than likely you'll start, those things keeping pace with what's going on in the Internet, and we'd expect to see some stronger ciphers there. Of course, none of what I just said is any sort of a promise of anything IBM might or could deliver. It's just sort of an observation about what's going on in the market.
Our next question comes from Matthew Eaton. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning. In question 4, you talked about tracking not authorized errors in ZOS. Could you also touch on doing that for distributed MQ?
Okay, so the question was from slide number 4, we talked about identifying authorization errors in Z, and could we expand on that for distributed? I believe Morag will take this one.
Okay, I'll take this question. This is Morag here. Yes, so on the distributed platforms, we don't have the luxury of an external security manager that's part of the OS like we do on ZOS. So instead of having that external security manager reporting the authorization failures, we have a component within MQ that will write an event message. So you may be aware that whenever MQ as a product needs to push out information to alert users, we write an event message to a particular event queue. So not authorized failures are written to the system admin queue manager event queue, and they are controlled by a switch on alter queue manager called author EV, short for authority events. So you set that particular flag to enabled, and you will get an event message recording the user that caused the failure, the object they were trying to access, queue or topic or process, et cetera, and a field that says the action they were trying to do, so you can work out, they try to do a put, and so therefore you should be able to build the appropriate correcting setmqwhat command from the information in that event queue should you decide that that person should, in fact, have that particular authority on that object.
And I'll add to that if you use Mark Taylor's MS0P support pack, that it will actually format those events and put them in human-readable form to make them quite easy to use as a diagnostic tool. MO71 will help you with that as well.
Okay, thank you very much.
Our next question comes from F.J. Brandelick. Your line is open.
Hi. I was wondering, is there any timetable to be able to use elliptic curve cryptography with MQ?
So the question is, when might we see elliptic curve cryptography with MQ? And the answer to that is, this really falls into that product futures. It's not been announced that we would or wouldn't do anything along those lines. So there's no way we can speculate on that at this time. I'm sorry.
Is it restricted to the lowest level of Java allowable?
Well, what we use for cryptography within MQ is really what's in the GS kit, and that's not at all Java. Now, there are some Java components that are running, performing crypto that, basically, I guess the answer to that is we kind of all go back to GSKit and what capabilities are in that, and that's actually another team within IBM, and unfortunately I don't have a good response for that, but I believe Morag will have.
I was just going to add a similar thing. Essentially, you may or may not be aware that the MQ product itself does not actually write encryption algorithms. We're in the business of messaging, and there are toolkits, for example, GSKit that we've been mentioning, that do the encryption algorithms. And as the encryption part of the IT industry brings in new algorithms and new cipher specs and new strength key sizes, etc., these toolkits, GSKit, for example, JSSE and Java, the system SSL features in the OSs on Z and I series, as they upgrade their facilities, MQ has had a history of taking a new version every so often and coming up to speed. So we will follow the industry as we go along. And as the industry adds new things, you can expect the MQ product to follow along by pulling those new versions of those toolkits or by allowing those new versions of those OS-provided features.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Pons Bala. Your line is open.
Yeah, I have three questions. One is on the SSL errors. We have a lot of difficulties in debugging SSL errors, like if the given password for the key store or the trust store is wrong, or if the key store itself is missing, or if one of the certificates is missing. It doesn't give out any of the details, so we have to really dig in and then go to each and every step, verify the certificate, file, and the password. It just gives to 059 error.
Firstly, I apologize that you've had trouble with setting up SSL. You say that you only get a 2059, so the application is reported a 2059 back to the client app.
Yeah.
Am I understanding you correctly?
Right.
So in addition to the application being told very little, and that is deliberate, but we don't want to give the application any hints in case it's some kind of hacker, right? We don't want to say to the client application, hey, your certificate wasn't wrong. Hey, try again. See if you can get it right this time. So we say very little to the client-side application to disallow him from being able to hack in. However, what we do is write error messages at the server side. And indeed at the client side too. So if the problem is truly client side and he has never gone as far as the server, you will see an error message in the client side MQ error log saying, for example, we couldn't access the SSL key database for this reason. You will also see server side MQ error log error messages indicating the reason for the failure and the ultimate 2059 to the client. So there is more information available. We just don't give it to the application.
Okay. See, I can understand that, but when the file is missing or if the password is wrong, can't at least those errors be displayed? At least that will be useful. Okay, if the cert is missing, that's for the client side. It's not for the server side, if you understand it.
I understand. I believe that in general, that is an administrative setup on the client-side machine. So rather than the application being the thing that needs to be fixed, there is,
no.
There is information in the error log.
Okay, this is for application specific, I'm asking. Okay, it is not machine specific. It's we are using application specific SSL certificates to connect to MQ.
So what you're saying, if I understand, is that your application is having a problem accessing its own key store.
Right.
And you're not seeing an appropriate error message for that.
Yes, it just gives 2059, that's all.
And you don't have any error log message?
No, we put MQJMS trace, nothing. It just does not show nothing.
Okay, well, I suspect it would be useful for us to take that feedback away and see if we can improve matters, because certainly we should be reporting an error on the client side to say what the error is, in addition to giving the application back 2059.
Yeah.
Can I ask what version of client you're using?
We are currently, with 7 itself. With 7 client also, there's the same thing.
And this is a JMS client?
JMS client, yeah.
If you would be so kind as to contact one of us offline, then we can dig into this a little further. Alternatively, if you open a PMR and send me the PMR number, then we can work it that way as well.
Okay. And second question. Okay. See, one queue manager is able to use only one certificate. So what the situation we have is, okay, we use internal certificates for the queue managers, and when we want to connect to an external vendor or another queue manager in another region, we want to use a different certificate. So is there a way we can specify some kind of a property? This is available on the MQIPT, but for the queue managers, I didn't see that. Like for a sender channel to another queue manager, if it can be specified to pick a different certificate, like with a different label. So if we can specify that, so we can start using even internal certificate for internal communication and a VeriSign or other certificate for external communication.
Okay, so to summarize this, the limitation of only being able to present one certificate based on the label of the certificate being linked to the queue manager name is something that you're running into. Now, part of the answer to that question you already mentioned, which is that we use IPT for that, and we very commonly will recommend IPT when somebody needs to present multiple certificates. So the ability to do this as a configuration within MQ is something that we've heard quite a bit. I say we, I mean, I'm sure the product team has heard it, but I personally get that feedback at the conferences quite a bit as well.
Yeah.
What I would encourage you to do, if you go to p-rob.net on the MQ page, there's a form in there for MQ requirements. And if you haven't already submitted one, I would suggest submitting that as a requirement.
Okay.
That will help to prioritize that. In the meantime, MQIPT, in case people aren't aware of this, it's a support pack that is a Category 3 support pack, and that means that it's considered a product extension, and it's you can open PMRs on it and so forth.
Okay, thanks, Rob. Okay, the third question. It's on the broker toolkit and the MQ Explorer. We haven't started using the 7 version, so I don't know how the user ID authentication works. Is it so suppose we are connecting to a Unix machine, can we give the Unix user ID and the password? And then so that will be taken effective onto the server con channel, even though if it has an MCA user ID, different one? How does that work?
Okay, so the question is, with Broker Toolkit connecting to MQ Broker in version 7, are there any changes in how the authentication and authorization takes place, right?
Yeah, plus on the MQ Explorer, you said that there is a tab for the user ID and password.
Right. Now, the thing to understand is that user ID and password, that panel on the Explorer, is there so that you can put in the fields that would be passed to an exit. And so, absent of that exit being there, the user ID is actually honored, but the password is not checked. So all you're doing is making an assertion, and MQ is honoring the assertion that's made. So again, this is kind of that security for honest people thing. If you use the user ID and password and you don't have an exit to verify the password, then the people who put in their correct ID will be authorized as you expect, and somebody who used that tool and put in the ID of MQM would become a full administrator. So the answer to this at this point is that if you have a queue manager that you need to enforce security on, you must make sure that for any non-administrative connection, there is an MCA user, and you've either hard-coded that or you've got an exit that has put that into place. So for Broker Toolkit, typically what I tell people is either, you know, you provide you set up SSL, and then you use an exit to map the SSL distinguished name to the particular ID that you need to accept on that incoming connection.
Okay. I thought we can get away from the security exit, but looks like it's not. Yeah, we use security exit to map the user IDs currently. Okay. Thanks.
Right. And that's currently still the gold standard for how to do this.
Okay. Thank you. That's all. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for your question.
Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Anshul Rastagi. Your line is open.
I think there was some other topic about encryption of data at rest, and I'm not sure if you want to talk about that, or is that also legally forbidden? Like, means there are certain applications, like the most of the core banking applications are retained, where they keep data on the weekends, because if they get a check amount or something, and they have to keep the data on MQ, some old applications. And like, and when we are doing all the security, it becomes very much unsafe if we keep those information, like credit card information and everything, on queues, right? And we have vendors in different areas, and everyone has access to see all those messages. So is there a way to encrypt data? I know, I think someone was doing it, Roger or someone.
Okay. So the question, summarize the question is I've got a need to encrypt data at rest.
Yep.
And what's a good way to do that?
Yep.
And I think I'll take this one. I don't see anybody in the panelist chat volunteering for this, and so I'll take it. Webster MQ Extended Security Edition is IBM's answer to that. And you also mentioned that Capitalware has got a product in that solution. And I should mention that Premier, P-R-I-M-E-U-E-R, also has a product that operates in that space. And the IBM product actually will intercept a call that's made at the application, or it can be installed as an MQ API intercept as well. So what happens is when the application goes to either put or get a message, ESE intercepts that get or put operation. It checks the certificate of the application, or it has checked the certificate when the application connected, and then it applies policy to that. So for any given queue, can an application put or get from that queue? And if you're getting messages from that queue, there's an additional policy that says perhaps you only want to get messages from a particular authenticated producer of those messages, and you can actually apply policy down to that level.
Yeah, okay. Actually, that was my first question about ESE, and I heard that you mentioned we have to reach out to the sales team and, like, doing all this NDA stuff, right? Non-disclosure agreement and everything.
Well, the ESE product that currently exists is something that we can talk about. It was the question that we mentioned earlier was, you know, had to do with, you know, the features of that product. So, you know, the ESE product that exists is, you know, something we can certainly talk about. And one of the things that we'll mention about that is when you intercept that call and the message is encrypted at that point, then every ephemeral instance of that message is encrypted. So that means when it's in memory, it's encrypted. If we write it to a queue file, it's encrypted. When it goes to the log file, it's encrypted, and so forth. So if you're using, for example, linear logs, and you're archiving those things off, then the version of the message that lives in the linear log is archived off as well. Now, it's perfectly usable if you ever have to restore those logs, that the application that would get the message, you know, will still be able to get it after that point. But if somebody were to steal a tape that had those log files on it, then they wouldn't do them any good. The other thing that I'll mention, because I get a lot of questions about this, people ask whether or not I can put an encrypted file system underneath the queues and logs, and does that satisfy a requirement for encryption at rest? And the answer that a lot of assessors that I've talked to is no. The reason for that is if you have access to the operating system or access to MQ itself, and you get a message that is on an encrypted file system, then the message is transparently decrypted and handed to you. The real benefit of an encrypted file system is if someone steals your disk, then they can't use it.
Yeah.
But all the legitimate users of the operating system and somebody who might have compromised or hacked into the operating system, that encryption is worthless in terms of protecting data from those people. So I just wanted to throw that out there, and maybe Matt, maybe that'll help us to fend off that particular question.
Yeah. And I think there's a third thing which is not exactly security. Like we have been getting a lot of situations when a certificate is expired and we cannot monitor it. I don't know if it's security related or something. Is there a way we can monitor a certificate expiry?
Okay, so to summarize the question, how do we monitor a certificate expiry?
Yeah.
There's a couple of answers for that. So there's a business partner that does, it's Venafi. That's it, it's Venafi. So Venafi actually does a PKI that understands MQ artifacts, like the KDB files and so forth. And Venafi will actually help you with that. And it's not just MQ. They do a PKI that's enterprise-wide.
Okay.
MQ itself is really not in the PKI business. But, you know, whatever PKI that you have, if you're managing your certificates through it, then it's going to give you those notifications. Now, the kind of my answer as an MQ administrator who, you know, was struggling to get funding for such a thing back in my days at the bank, and things that I've done with other customers is I script a lot of this stuff. And so I have scripts that run on the servers that periodically, you know, look at the key stores, and they, you know, then look at the expiry of the things in the key stores, and they send messages back out to us.
Yeah.
And if you go to t-rob.net, take a look at the on the links page. MQ Security Lab from the conference is there. And
yep.
It has a lot of those scripts in it, so that's a good starting point if you wanted to do some scripting.
Okay. I think we use a tool called Certany. That means we wanted to move away from script to a centralized management. Like, I just put in yesterday an RFE with the OmegaMon team for doing that. Like, can we monitor a certificate expiry from OmegaMon? I think that's fine. I got my answer.
Great. Thank you.
That's it. That's all I have. Thanks.
And we have no additional questions at this time.
Thank you, everyone, for your participation in the live Q&A period. At this point in time, I would like to move on to slide number 25 and pass the presentation over to Paul for a summary of today's session.
We heard many good things here today that have been very helpful to a lot of you, I'm sure, and I wanted to just point out a couple of things that were brought up. First, SSL is security for honest people. It's a good start. Second, take a look at T. Rob's presentation that he gave to the Share conference. There's a lot of details in there that we haven't discussed today that you'll find useful. A few things about topic security. First is that you can do that at the top or it can vary from topic to topic. There's a lot of flexibility there. Make use of profiles to customize your security. Not everyone needs the all ADM. If you need to present multiple certificates, consider using MQIPT. And in summary, as we can see, there's a lot more to security than SSL, but it's a good start. Thank you. Joseph.
Thank you, Paul, for a great summary. At this point in time, we will conclude the OpenMind session.